in your face. I'm joined by Richard Keane, who is the CEO of Living Positive Victoria. Richard, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Let's start with MPOX. Mm-hmm. What is happening there in Melbourne?
Well, I think we've still got a little bit of a situation where we've got relatively low numbers, but there's some active cases across the community. And I thank you for the opportunity to kind of reinforce our call out in regards to vaccinations for MPOX. It's pretty straightforward. Those vaccinations are free, particularly for those folks who are maybe men who have sex with men, trans folks, bisexual folks. All of those folks can access vaccination for free. And the importance of the vaccination continues to show today. And I guess there's one of the risks and one of the kind of groups I'd like to talk about today is those folks who might be travelling overseas. They might have saved for a trip of a lifetime. We're coming up to that Northern Hemisphere kind of Pride Month and all that kind of thing. A lot of folks will save for a couple of years and go and do that without knowing that some of those countries you can't access the vaccination in while you're there, and a whole range of things. And whilst vaccination will not 100% cover you from contracting MPOX, what it will do is greatly reduce the severity of the disease and the ability of forward transmission. We're learning a little bit more about MPOX because it's been around for a while now. We've had a number of discussions, James, and again, I thank you for the opportunity to engage around this issue. One of the things that we've kind of found out in that interim period is there's about a four-day period between exposure and the beginning of symptoms. And one of the things that's so confusing is that not all symptoms are obvious. So we talk about MPOX with skin outbreaks and sores and other things like that. But for some folks, it might just be cold and flu symptoms, aching bones. That's the initial kind of response to coming in contact with MPOX. And I think we've spoken about before how MPOX is transmitted. It's usually by body fluids, also skin-to-skin contact with somebody that might be carrying MPOX around. And so really our main tool is getting vaccination. So you need one vaccination and then a couple of months later to get a booster to ensure that that vaccination is fully covered. And while it will not be foolproof in you not contracting MPOX if you're exposed, it greatly reduces the symptoms and also the forward transmission likelihood of you passing it on to somebody else.
We're seeing a cycle in Melbourne. The first outbreak was 2022.
Yes.
Then there was another big one that began in April 2024 and almost like Groundhog Day in April of this year, it was announced in the middle of the month, 12 cases had suddenly appeared in Melbourne, which was much more than the usual one or two that was expected. And then the health department kind of went quiet.
Yeah, and I was trying to look up to get the latest kind of information today. And for folks who are seeking some information about MPOX, some government-led information, the Better Health Channel with the Victorian Health Department, betterhealth.com.gov.vic.au, I think it is. But just type in Better Health Channel and it will take you straight away. It shows the places where you can get vaccination, not only high caseload clinics and Melbourne Sexual Health, but a lot of pharmacies and stuff are also offering free vaccinations around, particularly in the city. If you're living outside Melbourne Metro, hospital EDs and things like that also have sexual health and infectious diseases components to the work that they do, and all have received training about engaging people in a respective way about any concerns that they might have, whether they've been exposed to MPOX. So I think one of the challenges here is that in some ways, we had a very strong uptake at the beginning because everyone thought, oh my God, this is a new thing. I want to protect myself. And folks like me raced in to get a shot in their arm and other things like that. But I guess over time, and one of the reasons that it's really good to continue this dialogue with you, James, is that I think we've kind of the saturation and reach of organisations like mine and Thorn Harbour Health with the communities that they engage with has kind of been done. But there's a whole lot of folks out there that may not be connected to our organisations that may occasionally have a same-sex engagement or something or other, and they may not identify as gay, they may not be out, a whole range of other things. But for those people to consider that as well, and particularly if you're attending sex on-premises venues and other things like that on a regular basis, they seem to be kind of some of those areas where there might be an elevated risk, not over the top, but anything that we can do to kind of prevent forward transmission of Mpox, we should do. And we are so privileged that we live in a country that provides free vaccinations for folks when an issue like this comes up in the community.
I remember in April 2024, there were three cases that were unrelated, locally acquired. And within a few months, there were hundreds.
Yeah.
This time, it began with 12 cases just appearing in Melbourne. I don't know if they were locally acquired. You would assume that they probably were. But that would suggest, and the health department's gone really, really quiet. It's really secret squirrel, is that there are quite a few more cases in Melbourne now. Do you know what health services are reporting? Because the government's just not.
No, it's hard to gauge that. So it is a notifiable condition. So every time someone is diagnosed with an Mpox case, regardless of where they are, whether it's a kind of small caseload GP or whether it's a larger service like Melbourne Sexual Health or a hospital ED, that information goes then straight to the Health Department of Victoria. And some contact tracing goes on around. So you sit down, you have a dialogue with that person and you talk about where they've been, who they might have run into and how we can push those messages out to those communities and those specific areas just to ensure that folks get that vaccination. It's really easily tolerable. I don't think I can recall having any side effects from the vaccination myself when I took it. But it's really, really important just to gently reinforce that message. And I think it's one of those things that might always be around in really, really low numbers. And like you said, we have had a little spike recently after having a pretty long period of time where we were getting maybe one case every now and then. And I'm not sure whether those cases are locally acquired. I'm sure some of them are. But again, we want to reinforce those folks who are travelling. They might be travelling to places and not even the Northern Hemisphere. They might be going across to Bali or across to other places where vaccination is available, but at a high cost. So for example, in Singapore, I think it's $1,100 that folks have to pay over there to get both vaccinations. So we are really privileged. You should take advantage of that because by protecting ourselves, we protect others.
So it's a game of wait and see, really, with the health department actually telling us just how many cases there are now in Melbourne. You'd think it was a lot more than 12, but we just don't know. In terms of vaccination, I mean, the vaccination began here in Melbourne in 2022.
Yes.
A lot of people only had one dose. There's two. Plenty of people had two. And then when the second wave hit, quite a few people caught up to speed.
Yes.
How long does the vaccination last? Because you can't get a third shot in Australia, can you?
No, we can't get a third shot in Australia. So as far as we know and as far as the data's saying, it does have coverage over an extended period of time. But how long that is, I'm not quite sure because it only kind of arrived here in 2022. I guess they're following up. And I guess the other thing that makes it a bit more difficult to decipher is that it's not a 100% preventative vaccine. So, but what it does, if you do come in contact with it, your symptoms are very mild and like I was saying, maybe flu-like symptoms that could be mistaken for the flu.
So we don't know the efficacy, if you like, of the vaccine 4 years later.
Yeah, no, we're not sure. I haven't seen a whole range of data on that.
Living Positive Victoria is about to release some really groundbreaking research in relation to gender diverse and trans people who have HIV. What can you tell us about that? It is a collaboration with the Australian Research Centre for Sex Health and Society at La Trobe.
Yes, and as well as Transgender Victoria and the Equinox Gender Clinic at Thorn Harbour Health. So Living Positive Victoria had a small amount of money and we were thinking for so long, and it's only since 2017 that diverse genders have been collected as part of the HIV data. So up until 2017, if someone was trans or gender diverse, they were put into that data set at their gender at birth. So for a long time, trans folks and gender diverse folks were completely invisible. And as a result of that invisibility, it meant that they weren't included in comprehensive sexual health or HIV strategies because the data just wasn't existing. It was more about science wanting to keep those data sets clean and all that kind of stuff and have no variation. And 10 years on. This is it's quite novel research. It's the first research of its type in Australia. And we've got a really great group of people who've come and participated in that research just to map out what is their lived experience of HIV, where do they go and connect for their support, is there a kind of separation, like some folks in the survey have come back, and these are long interviews, over an hour long, they sit down and they really map out a whole range of things. Some folks at one end are saying that they're very, very lucky. They have their gender-affirming care and their HIV care in the one place. Other folks don't want anything to do with those two things in the one place. So in some ways, it's horses for courses. But I think what this research does is it provides a foundational base for us to move away from making assumptions around people and what suits them best and giving them the opportunity to tell us what they need and for us to design programs that are inclusive and that enable folks to kind of be visible within the HIV response in a way that we haven't seen that before, whilst kind of maintaining anonymity. You know, all those folks involved, all the details in that research is anonymous, of course, but what it's going to do is it provides a fantastic foundation for us to encourage more research in that area and for us to also lobby government around the supports and other services that might be needed by those folks who have a different lived experience in the way that they connect. And as CEO of my organisation, I used to sit back and I used to go, oh, well, you know, and, you know, admitting my own faults and lack of awareness and understanding. And this is what I was saying about making assumptions about what suits people and what doesn't. Some folks would like to connect with positive women's services. Some folks would like to connect with other services that we've got. And they find a place to fit in, but there's no defined place for them as a group of people. And so for a very long time, we were just kind of, I knew they were connecting with us because it was in our membership data and everything else. And I was just making assumptions about where they might be comfortable and where they might fit. And this research really shines a light on those lived experiences and kind of answers some of those questions. You're trying to always do the best you can with every population that you're engaged with as a CEO. But I think sometimes making assumptions or being afraid to kind of move in any direction in case you get it wrong is a barrier for good care to kind of be rolled out and be inclusive and to be informed by those communities. So I'm super excited. There'll be a launch on Monday, June 15th at 4 p.m. For folks who might be interested in logging on online or anything else, you can pop by our website at lpv.org.au with information about how to connect into the first showing of those research results. And we're super excited about it.
Wow. What can you tell us about the results?
I can tell you that it is as varied as that community. I was kind of hoping that there'd be some really key themes that we could follow, but it's a broad spectrum, as is gender, you know. So I think that what works for some people will not work for other people. There were some folks who were wanting their own group and wanting to kind of connect with other trans and gender diverse folks to share their lived experience. On the other end of that research project, there were folks who were quite happy and suggesting to us that we move away from, we become more inclusive of all folks and that we move away from, I guess, what has been an historically gendered lens in the way that we respond to a whole range of things, really, around our society, but particularly around, you know, groups for women, groups for men, how are those things are separated, and the reasons that they're separated had a strong foundation to begin with. But what we hope to achieve is to be more inclusive and to move away from that gendered lens and find a space where everyone can be quite comfortable to work together, to thrive together.
Richard Keane, the CEO of Living Positive Victoria, always great to see you at 3CR.
Thank you.
3CR.
In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ plus communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.